friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso.
Hello.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Cole Hornaday.
Hey.
And you guys are talking about zombies over there while I'm trying to get the show started.
We're not exactly talking about zombies. We're talking about the fact that Nicole... You know, used to be a major zombie head, and they're just not her jam anymore. And this is a revelation. You know, the crux of our relationship was once zombies and...
Yep, and horror movies.
We met. How major was your zombie head?
I don't have anything to talk with you about anymore.
I was a pretty major zombie head.
She had stacks of videos and...
I'm a big horror movie fan. I liked... a lot of the stuff that came out of, I don't know, was it 2000s? Where, like, mm-hmm. you know, all the 28 Days Later and the...
30 Days of Night.
30 Days of Night was,
That's a vampire movie.
Yeah, but, like, I liked that comic. Mm-hmm. I was really into Walking Dead when it came out in comics. So, yeah.
And now you...
And he's bought me plenty of zombie things and...
And now you've moved on to Horror High and...
Now she's a Marvel zombie.
Now I'm a Marvel zombie. Actually, I liked Marvel. I like the Marvel Zombies series as well.
Oh, I saw what you did there.
But
I just
but yes.
wanted to pretend you didn't do that.
Oh, okay.
Well, speaking of The Walking Dead,
yay.
Coming up the Emerald City Comic Con
nice
in the first weekend of April, they're going to have some big name media guests. Chris, you got an idea of who's going to be there?
Yeah, they've got Norman Reedus, who is Daryl from Walking Dead,
everybody's favorite,
and then Gemma Coleman from Doctor Who, and just noticed that they have Nathan Fillion from Serenity and Firefly and Castle and
Dr. Horrible.
Yeah, so there's some really good talents kind of showing up, and hopefully they won't cancel.
So. Yeah. I think Jenna Coleman was supposed to be in attendance last year and had to cancel at the last minute for whatever reason.
Right.
Anyway, so that's coming up in first weekend of April. And if you go to the Emerald City Comic Con, what are some recommendations to do while you're there? Aside from, of course, standing in a long line to get Nathan Fillion's autograph.
I'll always recommend spending a lot of time in the artist alley.
Oh, yeah.
And definitely. Finding the more local, smaller press creators, or just breaking into the business creators.
Is that a really dark hallway?
No.
Spider webs.
No.
And
there will be Emmett Comics at Emerald City Comic Con, who is a publisher who just started in 2015 with all female creators, artists and writers who are also writing stories with strong female protagonists. And
they did the Wendy Diary?
They did the Wendy Project.
Yep. Wendy Project.
They do Adventures in Cat Sitting, Molly mm-hmm. and Adventures in Cat Sitting.
And Romeo and Juliet and Guns, which you reviewed a little while ago.
Yeah, so they do a lot of fantastic stories, so I would definitely recommend going and swinging by their booth.
And Kelly and Nicole Matthews, who do our Faith covers, our Comic Sunshine exclusive Faith covers where she tours Seattle, they said they will have a booth mm-hmm. at Artist Alley. So you can go buy our Faith covers and take it to them and get some signatures and stuff going
on. Yeah, and if they're doing commissions, I highly recommend them because their art is just so, so wonderful, so pretty.
So you can actually pay them to draw you?
If that's what the
or
artist
you want.
Wants, you know.
Or draw your cat or whatever.
Yeah. When we had them here for a signing a couple weeks ago, we had some blank covers for Faith, and one customer had them draw Faith with Totoro, mm-hmm. and somebody else had Wonder Woman on the cover, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So, you can go and get a lot of sketches and commissions from artists, and it's a little bit less expensive to get them from local talents than to get them from, like, you know, big name people you have to wait in line for.
Right.
So I always recommend going through the Artist Alley, meeting new upcoming talents, and, you know, looking for cool things to buy.
Yep.
Awesome. All right. Well, Emerald City Comic Con, check it out. First weekend of April. But moving on to today's topics, we're going to be talking about industry changing comics. Now, these are comics or comic creators that in some way or another, for better or for worse, changed the comic book industry. We touched on this previously, just briefly in a previous episode. or actually the episodes are kind of getting switched around these days, so maybe we'll talk about it briefly in an upcoming episode. So sorry if we're repeating ourselves. But let's actually have a small discussion on industry-changing comics. Now, Chris, you have a piece of paper in front of you. With a list. Does this list have industry-changing comics and or creators on it?
Yes. It's got a few. They're not in any kind of order. But I think the one I would like to start off with is Showcase Comics number 4. It's the first appearance of Barry Allen as The Flash, and it's often regarded as the beginning of the Silver Age of comics and what revitalized superheroes as a genre in the comic book medium.
So the Silver Age started around
56
is when Showcase number 4 came out.
Okay. Cool.
So yeah, that's kind of the start point. And it's when you started to notice the focus on heroes and popular science as a motivation for those heroes, and like where they used to use Flash to teach you like Flash facts about physics and other aspects of science.
Well, let's set up the framework, because this is the comics industry after the aftermath of Frederick Wortham and Seduction of the Innocent, where, you know, there were very particular dictates about what could be said and what could be printed. Horror comics, crime comics, maybe war comics, you know, they could not use certain language. The phrase werewolf and vampire and zombie could not be used in a comic book, particularly thanks to all the hoopla around EC comics. So the only safe comic books that were there, to be printed or to be used in the medium were superheroes, that's why superheroes came back with such a force, but they were different. They were kinder, gentler superheroes and a little goofy. And we'd also had romance comics. Help me out. Do we have war comics then too?
I thought so. I thought they were always kind of running in the background.
Yeah. But there were no crime comics. There's no true crime comics, anything like that.
Where we got like all kinds of goofy anthropomorphic, animal comics and things like that. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, it was a kinder, gentler time in comic books. So,
worth noting, I got this information from John, who works here at the store, who's an amazing source of information when it comes to Golden Age, Silver Age, and Bronze Age comics, that Marvel had attempted to do the revitalization before the introduction of Barry Allen. They had started with Human Torch and Namor and Captain America, and they just didn't stick. I think he said like 3-issue miniseries, and I can't.
Yeah, he
quite
said
remember.
They got about 3 issues in, and then that was it. Yeah.
Well, was that not Marvel Comics number 1?
That's much earlier than that. That's a different scenario. As far as just like a birthing point for one of the most creative explosions of new superheroes and reinventions of old names of superheroes and stuff like that, Showcase Comics number 4.
Do you have, do you know what superheroes were in Showcase number 4? Who?
Barry Allen, The Flash is the big one.
Because you said that. All right.
That's good. There may have been somebody else in there. I forget.
Well, this is when Julie Schwartz was revamping a lot of the Golden Age characters, like recreated Green Lantern, recreated The Flash. Recreated Wonder Woman.
Reintroduced her.
Brought them into the more modern context.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly Green Lantern and The Flash. And I'm trying to think who else kind of got rebooted.
Well, introduction to Martian Manhunter.
There you go.
More, again, like aliens and more sci-fi Justice happening. League. Yeah. And a lot of this was a response to JFK. And him kind of wanting to push us towards a space age kind of thing and all that. Mm-hmm. So, I should have wrote more notes because I wrote more different things.
Right. But then the next crucial turning point is when we hit the Bronze Age. And the Bronze Age, you told me recently, the Bronze Age that's kind of spun on the Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams, Green Arrow, Green Lantern stories, right?
Yeah. Right, yeah. And I think in one of the last podcasts, we had started to touch upon that. And what's interesting is that Grant Morrison credits the run of Green Lantern, Green Arrow by Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams as the beginning of the Dark Age of comics. Mm. And it's because it's that focus on social political aspects and issues of race and religion. relevant comics. So it's the stuff that started to introduce the idea of like, oh yeah, no, comics are real. They can touch on all these subjects and all that. And later people would run that through the grinder in some negative ways. But there was also many positive things to come out of that too.
So that the Dark Age of comics coincided roughly with the Bronze Age? Is that what I'm hearing?
It's about the same thing. It's Morrison.
Because of the chrysalis period.
Yeah, it's we're flush in the middle of the Summer of Love, the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. You know, eventually, you know, the breakfast bombings in Cambodia, Laos. And so there's a particular issue of Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Green Lantern. How did it go?
Green Lantern, Green Arrow,
Thank you. That bucked the comics code, right? When Speedy, the cover, on the cover you have Speedy shooting heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the first comics to be printed without the Comics Code of Authority seal, which, you know, Marvel and DC at one time or another would challenge. You know, but let's face facts, that particular story was not in support of drug use. And yet the comic code wanted to avoid, all reference to any things of those nature, which was absurd.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. What's next?
Did either of you want to throw any in?
Well, I was thinking about, we always talk about Alan Moore and Frank Miller, and let's just skip those guys right now, because we do.
Yeah.
I think I was thinking about this, and I think every other episode we pay homage to them in some way, and we don't need to do that anymore.
It's all right. You can say homage. I won't talk.
Homage. Homage. But I was thinking about how there were subtle shifts that happened in the 80s. And I was thinking about, what an impact Claremont and Byrne's X-Men had on popular consciousness. Now, mind you, go back and try and read those now. And the sensibilities therein, the way the dialogue is written, even the artwork is all very dated. But at the time, it had a real impact on how comics were being seen. Comics were reaching a wider audience, more young women and people of color and LGBT teens were reading the comic book. In fact, there were a lot of young gay males who were really inspired by the X-Men comics, because to have these mutant teenagers that were social outcasts, that was one of the first times they ever had an opportunity to really project themselves into comic book characters. Mm. Then came Perez and Wolfman's Teen Titans, which was a little bit, was kind of along those lines. But that really galvanized the value and the beauty of teen books and what teen books could do. And also the value of long-term creative teams on a book and developing a scope and a spectrum of stories and a family mm-hmm. of characters. And I think that's something that gets overlooked sometimes, because, you know, we have X-Men movies right now because those books sold like hotcakes back in the day,
mm-hmm.
you know? And those characters became Wolverine and Colossus and Deadpool. All got entrenched thanks to those books back in the day.
All right.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that Sex Criminals is a bit of a game changer.
Because
I know we talked about Saga a lot, and it's a bestseller. But Sex Criminals is one of those, not as big as Saga, but the humor and the fact that they're talking about sex so openly, and just I've seen a lot of different people picking up Sex Criminals who may not read comics even, so it even transcends even just the Saga stuff too. I feel like it's a little too early to tell, but I mean, like, from this they're launching their TV shows and all different types of things. Like, it mm-hmm. it actually is giving some sort of more of a momentum in a transmedia sort of thing mm-hmm. outside of the mainstream comics of Marvel and DC. So it might be a little too early to tell, but I kind of feel like it's one of those, like, we might look back on and go, remember when Sex Criminals happened and that and all that mm-hmm. stuff? So I kind of feel like that's one.
That's a really good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I do have a list. Should I just maybe pick two or three more, or should I rapid fire a couple of these, do you think?
What other one on your list would you say has a more like general cultural impact as opposed to like an industry specific one?
Well, let's say Sandman.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say the formation of Image.
Okay. Yeah, that was
1992. Yeah. But yeah. Talk about Sandman, because I talk about Sandman way too much.
I'll just do a real quick, just a quick touch on it. It's just Sandman's often credited with really giving the impression of literary credibility mm-hmm. to the medium. Mm-hmm. And because they're beautifully crafted stories. They borrow a lot from numerous pieces of literature. But the other aspect about that that's really important of Sandman is that it helped make Vertigo comics as an imprint of DC a juggernaut. And so many things were able to be released afterwards due to that. Things mm-hmm. such as Transmetropolitan, mm-hmm. Preacher, mm-hmm. Scalp, like a bunch of other properties, 100 Bullets, and even iZombie, things that we're now seeing in the media, and Why the Last Man, mm-hmm. you know. So Sandman was, it did numerous things, but that I really think that its foundations, becoming a foundation stone of Vertigo mm-hmm. is a really important aspect.
Yep. All that's gone now.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it might actually be like the original saga, like people who don't read comics read Sandman.
Right.
You know, that's that true. That literary credibility.
Yep.
Yeah.
Taking, like, there's less collectability in Sandman single issue comics. Like, there's a certain value. But Sandman number one is nowhere near as valuable as, like, saga number one right now.
Right.
And that's because most people who want to read Sandman or want to have a copy of Sandman want to have it in a book format, a mm-hmm. trade paperback, mm-hmm. or one of these super nice hardcover editions.
Mm-hmm. Because it's worthy of it.
Yep. And there's like seven different ways you could own it. You know, you could buy the $150 copy one. You could buy the one that you can kill somebody with. You know, so.
Because it's heavy.
Yes.
Oh, they're heavy. For bludgeoning.
Yeah, for bludgeoning. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's how I grade all my comics.
It's poison. Yeah. No.
Comics version of Lord of the Rings. By that movie set and all the different ways. Cole, tell us about Image Comics.
Just that. You know,
or
there
don't.
Are a couple of renegades from Marvel and DC who decided to break away and start their own company in 1992. It was Todd McFarlane and Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee and Eric Larson, mm-hmm. Wiltz Portasio, a couple other people, and I'm probably leaving, Jim Valentino. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's interesting is that when they started that company, they were all of those creators, many of whom who've kind of become vilified after the fact because of their outrageous egos, they broke some ground, and they were pioneers in creators' rights in a lot of ways. But the other thing to consider is that they started that company because they all had made their mark as superhero creators, and now that company is not about superheroes. It's about, mm-hmm. But it is about independent creators and independent opportunity, and that's where we get some of the most amazing books that are on the market right now, like Walking Dead, mm-hmm. and Saga, and I am
East
very
East of West.
East mm-hmm. of West. Mm-hmm. What else am I? I mean, there's a lot of good books. I can't even keep up with
tons.
All those that they produce anymore. Mm-hmm. And you know, Chris was telling me at one point when the big two are looking at months where they're tanking, in particular DC, Image is always reliable. Image sales, Image books are always reliable. People can at least he can trust the fact. I'm going to talk about you like you're not here.
Okay.
At least he can trust the fact that he can that people are going to be coming into the store to buy Image books.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're not buying Marvel and they're not buying DC. At least they're going to be coming through the door to buy Image books. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty cool thing.
They actually have one of the titles that I've been collecting is God Hates Astronauts.
Yes.
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 Yeah. And see, that means I, as much as I don't like Rob Liefeld's artwork, I got to give him credit. Yeah. For that, you yeah. know,
can't same. Draw feet, but same. You know, we've Marlon. Got.
But thank you, thank you, Rob. Thanks.
Tiny feet.
I don't have a lot of respect for actually any of those guys. You know, watching some of the shenanigans they pulled over the years, but the fact that they established that company, mm-hmm. and
so,
that company has made great strides for creators. You got to applaud them for that.
Exactly. So Todd McFarlane or Rob Liefeld, if you're watching or listening, email us at perfectmoundpodcast@gmail.com and tell us how full of it we are, because we know we're not saying
because
very
we
nice
know how full.
You.
You are.
No.
Alrighty. So those are some comics. Those are some examples of titles and authors or creators who've changed the industry. Chris has a big list here. We didn't get to all of them, so I'm sure
we can revisit it again
at a later date if I'm looking for subjects to put on the show sheet the day before we record all these. Let's move on to our next topic of the evening, and it's another topic that we touched on briefly in a either previous or future episode, and that is evolution. That is comics either characters, titles, that have gone through a significant change from either the very first days or even just episode or issue one, whichever issue one you consider number one, to how they to where they ended up or where they are today.
Right.
Some obvious examples of
well, last time I brought up Grendel, Matt Wagner's Grendel.
Exactly,
you know,
Grendel.
And we don't really need to talk about that any further, but you know, it started out as an anti-hero story, and that character, it went thousands of years into the future, and the Grendel presence still existed, but it was a cultural icon, a religious figure that started out as a mutant super brain mob lord, and then evolving into this. It was a fascinating story. It was like Chaucerian. You know, the way that kind of developed in scope.
Yeah.
sorry.
No, keep going. You're on a roll. You're on a roll.
Did I cut you off?
No.
Did you have something you want to say?
No, we'll check the transcripts later. But
oh, shoot.
I just had filler for when somebody stopped talking. But you keep going.
No,
so.
It's me, dude.
Filler right here.
I was just going to say.
The human filler.
I was just going to say that the example that I led with last time we talked about this was The Simpsons, where I consider it having two evolutions. One is the evolution of the artwork, where it started off being very rough, very, very, also angular.
Mm-hmm.
And
crude. It was very crude looking.
Yeah, very crude. And then, and even from the beginning of the series, it still was very rough. But then, and like Dan Castellaneta lent his voice as Homer went from like a Walter Matthau impersonation to where he like owned Homer. But then the show also went through this sort of like character focus evolution, where it started off as stories about Bart and how Bart's such a bad kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then it evolved more into about how Homer is, well, Homer, you know, he's a family man, but he's flawed and in some deep, deep ways. But he still loves his family. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Okay.
Now, continue.
With, you know, one could say that with The Simpsons, it just... I see that show as creatively maturing over time. You know, and expanding and evolving.
Yeah.
And I think what I wanted to talk about was how... Was books and stories that just... That evolve from, say, a tomato... into an apple, you know, just or a tomato into a pumpkin. It just becomes something an entirely different beast altogether.
Well, now that's an interesting point, because are we talking about an evolution that happens naturally over time because the story demands it, or are we talking about an evolution that happens because maybe
a
the
revamp.
Creator, yeah, the creator's like, well, I want to take this in a different direction now.
Yeah.
I think it's open. The other example that we didn't hit on that I thought about after the we recorded the previous show was Dave Sims' Cerebus the Aardvark.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I am probably the only person I know that slogged through all 300 issues of Cerebus the Aardvark. Now, Cerebus the Aardvark was Dave Sims, a very wacky man. And that's a kind
that's
way
a
of...
That's a very nice way of putting
it. Yeah,
that's
a kind way of putting it. But he's also genius-level brilliance to the point where I don't know that he's compatible with a greater part of the human race. So he started out in the late 70s with a comic book that ostensibly was a takeoff or a satire on Conan the Barbarian, and particularly Barry Windsor-Smith's Conan the Barbarian from the Marvel Comics. Sim was imitating Barry Windsor-Smith's style. There were send-ups of Red Sonja and characters like that. And then eventually it started to evolve into a book that satirized other comic books, so like and lampooned the X-Men and Moon Knight and Batman and Swamp Thing, and then. Every time Sim went through, I don't know, a revelatory moment of self-discovery, he incorporated it into this book. You know, when he discovered the works he went through this period where he's fascinated with the Three Stooges, so the Three Stooges got incorporated into the book, and Oscar Wilde, and there's a whole book devoted to there's a whole story arc devoted to Oscar Wilde.
Keith Richards.
Well, Keith and
Mick Jagger?
Mick Jagger are both in it. You know,
I can't read those because he puts dialect in there.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate that.
Oh, yeah. So
well,
and
for those
and,
two humans,
And there was a character that was based on Groucho Marx, Lord Julius. And Lord, you know, so it was just this, it was this hodgepodge. It was this mashup, and it just kept evolving and evolving and evolving until, and when Sim went through a period of religious rediscovery and converted to Judaism, that became part of Cerebus's story. And it just, it was so far off the beam from one-sided send-up of Conan the Barbarian, it was incredible. But to watch the evolution of the book and to sit through the evolution of the book was truly fascinating. It's just not something that everybody can do, you know.
I take it this title is no longer being published.
No, he called it a 300-issue miniseries.
Oh, God.
Miniseries.
Yep.
How long were these issues?
They were regular comic book length. They were black and white. Yeah.
But he is... reformatting them to digital or something?
Something like
that. There was
that.
A big project that he's still doing that sometimes he does Kickstarter stuff for.
Yeah. He's also got some anthology book he does right now, right?
Yeah.
He's a really brilliant man, but whoever he writes his stories for, I don't know who those people are. I've never met anybody.
You apparently. You read
well,
all of them.
That's because I also felt like, you know, I was fascinated by this process, and it was not an easy slog to get through all these books. And I have every blasted one of them. And I don't know if I will ever reread them.
Yeah.
And seriously, Ben, they're on my bookshelf. My bookshelf bows in the middle because they are so heavy.
They're chunky.
They're dense.
Now, on the plus side to those, the one thing I always like to bring attention to them is that, and I forget his name, unfortunately.
Gerard, the background artist?
Yes. Yeah. At some point, they've seemed just hired somebody else to draw the backgrounds.
Which is really smart.
And they're beautiful.
Yeah.
I checked out that guy's website, and like it's nothing but these just beautiful backgrounds and landscape work, and I kind of want to buy them all.
Mm. There was a period where a lot of people jumped off and abandoned Dave Sim, and that was when he was going through, he was divorcing his wife, Denny, and he incorporated a lot of his animosity toward his ex-wife into the comic book, and there's one sequence where Cerebus actually rapes a young woman, and...
That's heavy.
Yeah, and he and Sim, you know, is a talker and spent a great deal of time trying to justify the actions of that character, and a lot of people were pointing the finger at him saying, well, the only reason why this came up in the story is because of what you're experiencing in your personal life. Be that as it may, it was a really dark time for that comic book. And I think a lot of people, I actually was self-conscious about telling people I was still reading it because of that particular event.
Gotcha. So before I go off and start a GoFundMe to buy Cole some more shelves for his comic books, anybody have any other evolutionary comics?
Yeah, so I was having trouble really thinking of a good example, but the one that came to mind for me was the expanding Mignolaverse. Mignolaverse.
Mignolaverse.
Because I love his artwork, I love his storytelling, mm-hmm. but I have trouble actually believing that to the level that is expanded now with the mm-hmm. BPRD comics, mm-hmm. the Abe Sabian, Lobster Johnson, Baltimore, everything, that it's not solely his creature anymore. It's mm-hmm. it's evolved into something else. And a lot of that I want to credit to John Arcudi, who I think is like one of the best creators in the industry that nobody gives credit for, mm-hmm. Because a lot of his work in BPRD, which I'm sure was guided by was some of the most enjoyable for me. So the expansion of mythology, mm-hmm. the evolution past just the stories of this guy with red skin and horns punching monsters going boom every time he punched mm-hmm. him into like this fully functional Lovecraftian monster world that mixed up other mythologies. Yeah. So that would have been my example.
Okay. Cool.
I think the only other example that I could think of was Marvel's 2001 A Space Odyssey that Jack Kirby did. Mm-hmm. It was originally supposed to be just a straight up adaptation of the movie, which was, you know, challenge enough in and of itself. But I don't think anybody was paying attention to what Kirby was doing. Because, you know, once they kind of finished the adaptation of the film, Jack just started doing his own stuff. And he incorporated, you know, aren't the Eternals in it at some point?
I can't remember, but and, you get Machine Man.
Machine Man, yeah. Mm-hmm. Machine Man makes his first appearance in that. And they are, you know, the epitome of 1970s Jack Kirby, you know, epic comic storytelling. They're just really gorgeous. And they have nothing to do with the Kubrick film. They just kind of go, Jack, where he wanted to go.
Yeah.
It's a good place to go.
Yeah.
I think that manga is something to note because manga tends to have really long runs. Something that I read that actually had an ending was Death Note. And that one... I don't know if it's so much evolved as just sort of switched gears, and I'm not sure, like, just new characters showed up, things, like, completely changed about halfway through the series, and I don't know if that's something that, like, it meant to have an ending, and then they were like, no, this is really good, keep going, like they did with Fables, or not, but, you know, there's something there that it just all of a sudden abruptly changes, and it made a difference for me in my enjoyment of it, because I was kind of going for the long game. Mm-hmm. And some mangas go on for, you know, hundreds of volumes, and so of course there's going to be some sort of evolution, although I can't comment on those because that's way too much of a commitment for me at this point.
Battle Angel Alita,
it goes crazy, really, yeah, ships. And it evolves and goes into an alternate time stream,
right?
So that's something I'll always talk about if you guys let me talk about it. So yeah. don't get me yeah. started.
Oh, well, I'll bring that up at a later date when we have some time to fill. Are there so to wrap this up? Generally speaking, when a comic evolves. And we're using the term pretty loosely, but when it evolves away from where it started, does that enhance your enjoyment because it's changing, it's new, it's fresh, or does that kind of decrease your enjoyment of it because, well, you started reading it because you liked how it was, and then now it's not what you liked anymore?
I think it depends on the genre and nature of it, because if it's more creator-owned and it's not superhero, then you're just like, yeah, you're growing. Mm-hmm. But we often have very iron cast ideas of certain superheroes. And if you change something a little too much from the core, then we get a little snippy about it.
Right.
Yeah.
But in other ways, I love the ideas of legacy for like DC Comics. No longer, but like right now, Spider-Man, I think a lot of people don't care about the main Spider-Man book anymore because it's changed so much, and I actually love that.
Yeah.
Because Peter Parker's grown up, he's got like, he's the poor man's Iron Man, he's got other people helping him, he's not just the same old loser, and now we can read about Miles and other people.
Yeah, there's so many spider people, it's evolved into having this whole Spider-Verse, which is great, because I don't care about Peter, but I want to check out what's going on with... Yeah. Whomever.
Right.
So, like, I like that idea, but I know that probably there's still a huge amount of people that are like, no, I want Peter to have girl problems all the time. And it's just like,
Yeah.
There will always be that.
Yeah. I think if the work is inspired and the creator is on fire and it's a fire that catches my eye, I want to support that. And, that, you know, that's... I couldn't get past the verve of Dave Sim. I mean, I had a terrible time relating to what he was doing, but I was fascinated with this process this man was going through. It was just amazing to me because he put that... He also... I bypassed this, but he also broke a lot of ground for independent creators. I mean, he wrote the book on creative of independent distribution and a lot of the stuff that the fellows from Image pursued. Dave Sim did all that first, and he did it by himself. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all for your input. You all are wrong. Comics should never change, and Peter Parker should always be a teenager with girl problems. Let's move on to book report. Nicole, let's start with you.
Starting with me. Oh. Well,
let's start with Nicole. Well, she's doing quiz time today, so she gets to go first in book report.
We're the Coles. Okay.
Generally, how I try to do it.
Okay. What did I do? Which one is this? Oh, this is this one. I'll do this one. I need fingers. Okay, sorry, I wasn't ready for this.
Cole, do you have something?
I'm ready now.
She's ready. Okay. She's good.
So this is a series. It's called Heartthrob, and it's something that's coming out from Oni Press that I got a chance to read. It's by Christopher Sabella, Robert Wilson IV, and Nick Filardi. All very wonderful names. So the premise is, it's in 1977, a girl who's had congenital heart problems her whole life and has been sick and, you know, probably not really living her life to the fullest, gets a heart transplant. And lo and behold, the heart transplant came from a master thief. And they kind of like ghost in that they like fall in love, but him as a ghost because he's part of her. And then they decide to rob stuff. Is the general premise. It's kind of weird. I think that it's interesting, but I had a lot of problems with it. And I was just wondering if it was just because right off the bat, I was just like, this sounds weird. So I didn't want to actually have a review just being like, bah, you know, because I didn't think that was a really good review. So I think that the only thing where it didn't work, I think it flushed out most of the story pretty well. Like you get her backstory and everything. The only thing is the love part of it seemed kind of forced. It was just like he appears before her and she thinks he's just some guy in a bar, and then she finds out that only she can see him and that he's been kind of watching her for like the last month that she's had the heart inside of her body, which is kind of creepy. And then after all of this realization, it's like, so we're in love now, so we should spend the rest of, you know, this time together robbing things. It was just like, what? It's kind of weird. But everything else was kind of interesting. It's something that I personally haven't read in a comic book. It kind of reminded me of like maybe they're trying to do like a little bit of like a serious sex criminals kind of thing. I don't know. I didn't know if they were getting the story from some other bits and pieces. But I feel like as a period piece, it works pretty well too, because I definitely felt like this is the 70s. I can't place where in the 70s. So I feel like a lot of things they did right. So if this sounds like an interesting premise or maybe just weird enough to check out, I would recommend it. I probably won't be reading more of it, though.
Now, this telling. Is just a sample, right?
It's just a sampler. Yeah, it's like a, I did that
like
with
what they used to call an ash can, but it's actually on color.
So
paper.
It's something that'll be coming out, you know, maybe in a couple months or something like that.
So the real comic book will be comic book size.
Yeah. So it's definitely something a little bit different than I think that you'd normally find. And having a period piece like this, when a lot of stuff is either like modern or fantasy or sci-fi, is a, you know, a little different take. They it's like they drew things out of a hat and then made a comic. It's kind of what it feels like, you know. But that could sometimes be a good thing, you know. So maybe the long-term thing of this will be more fleshed out and might end up being really cool.
If I may interject, I really like the idea of all future reviews, instead of us actually explaining things, just literally being like, blah. But if we like them, then we just put it down nicely, and it's like, good job, book.
Oh. Yes, the Spider-Man I put down and was just like, I like you, Spider-Man. That isn't a future or past review. I don't
hear
know.
Myself talk. So, I have to hear my own voice. Oh. No.
No,
I
guess. You can do all the talking, and we'll just do the...
I'll throw the book for you.
We'll just throw the book and grunt and or go,
Yeah, or yay.
All right, so Cole... did you read something this week that you want to throw or that you want to place down gently?
I think I want to throw it.
Oh, so what is it? Tell us about it.
It is the second issue of Len Wein and Kelly Jones' retro Swamp Thing book.
You liked the first one, though, right?
I did like the first one.
Begrudgingly,
because,
I thought.
I have issues with the first one. Well, I brought up the notion that it's frustrating these veteran writers, in particular, like Len Wein, who still seem to be writing in the 1970s.
Right.
Well, guess what? He's still there.
And, is he bringing up the Vietnam War?
Well,
no.
What's frustrating is that... Hula hoops. You know,
the story... I realized in reading the second issue that no attention has been paid to the brilliant strides forward that the Swamp Thing character took. And I don't just mean Alan Moore. I mean Rick Veitch. I mean Nancy Collins. I mean a lot of other writers who took him forward and took that character to a different place. And you know, and supporting characters that were fun. And this is just this weird retro story that is trapped in time and is actually kind of frustrating to read. The Shade shows up, who's the villain from, or the Machiavellian character from James Robinson's Starman, and also had his own miniseries that was actually, I thought, quite good. And The Shade is this bizarre, you know, immortal character. And then, but what I think what bugged me is then at the end, Swamp Thing or Matt Alec Holland's old companion from the older books, Matt Cable, shows up. And, you know, if you've read the comic book, you know that Cable has been a ghost. And also, Matt Cable is Matthew the Crow in Neil Gaiman's Sandman books. So
spoilers.
I was like, sorry, you need to know these things. So there was this, you know, it's a time capsule. It's dusty, it's crumbly, and this is going to be a frustrating read if this is where it stays.
Is it a legitimate time capsule, or is it just frustrating because we now live in, it's not contemporary. Is it trying to be of its time? That's my question.
Of the original, of its era?
I mean,
is it
trying to be a comic book from the 70s?
I think it might be. However, we have characters like The Shade and the Phantom Stranger show up. So it's hard to, but the sentiment of the character is of the 70s.
Yeah.
And that's what's frustrating to me.
Okay.
Yeah, Chris.
Would it be less frustrating if there was just a straight up opening editor's box being like, yeah, this is what we're doing?
Yeah, yeah, to get the context of a throwback.
That's what most DC misses.
Disavowing all the good stuff that has gone before, and I think that's what's happening in a lot of capacity in DC's storytelling right now.
So a verdict is toss it.
it's a tosser.
I will keep reading the book because I want to see what happens, and I will. Unfortunately, I will probably beg you to suffer through what? How many issues is it running? Six.
Each book report will have Cole mulling
lambasting the latest issue of Swamp Thing.
All right, Swamp Thing. Thank you, Cole. Yep. Chris, what about you?
So we're still in the cycle that I actually didn't read anything new because I've been busy.
We've not changed our clothes since last week.
Yes. What?
No. So smelly kind of people
look like this all the time.
So I'm just making recommendations. So there's a series of these beautiful art books. They are stories, but they're also art focused books, published by Magnetic Press, and they are called the Love series, and each one focuses on the day in the life of a different animal. And the first one is the tiger, and the second one did come out a month or two ago, called the fox. And they are created by, I'm gonna butcher this, Frederick Bremaud and Federico Bertolucci. Bertolucci. Mm-hmm. They're completely silent comics that just follow, in this case, the tiger.
Gorgeous art styles
And these stories kind of interweave with different animals as they meet along the paths at times. And you get kind of quick flashes to other creatures. And you get some nice art book material in the back. And for an $18 package, it's handsomely bound, nicely designed, spot gloss. I love the spot gloss. And I just absolutely love the art style. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I will fully recommend these. They are available now. I don't know what the third one is. I think it might be Wolf. I don't know when that comes out. They're just kind of pleasant little surprises when they do come out.
Are they the same ones that did that fantasy one that was like Rye or Thai or something like, do you not remember what I'm talking about?
It was
like tigers that were like minotaurs that had multiple arms and stuff.
Different. Yeah, that was like Kickstartered, and I think Bud Plant did something with it. I can't quite remember.
Okay, well anyway, these ones definitely, they're gorgeous.
Cool. All right, thanks, Chris. Well, that's Book Report, and that's our show. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. You can see everything that Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. It is also brought to you by the Comics Dungeon here, 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford. Look at all these comics behind us. There's even more over there and over there.
And
t-shirts. And 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. You can find every episode of the Perfect Bound podcast at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. You have something you want one of our panels to review? Yeah, I'm thinking of reading that. Why don't you review it for me? Let us know and we'll do that. Or if you disagree with something that we've said on the show, please let us know. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a review if you want. And now it's time for quiz time. Get your quiz hats on, everybody. And this week, the questions come to us from Nicole. Lay it on us, Nicole.
Hello. So I figured, since we've done lots and lots of episodes of this, we've gone through terminology. We have the explain to Ben thing. So I thought that we would maybe revisit some of these of comic book terminology and test your trivia knowledge. Yeah, there you go. Great. Yes.
All right. I feel under pressure now.
they're fairly. I tried not to get too convoluted.
Okay.
So, you know. All right. So, question number one. Panel is a term used to describe what?
It's like that little box that the artwork's in.
Yes, that's exactly right. See, I feel like Ben Lawrence might actually win this.
I think this is a good quiz just for me.
It's also because I want to do the fastest, easiest quizzes ever.
Oh.
And this is a good one. Right? Okay. Number
two. The answer is ice cream.
Abraham Lincoln.
I kind of like where this is going.
James Tiberius Kirk.
All right. Number two.
Mangoes.
What does the term gutter refer to?
Oh, the gutter is a space in between the panel. In between the boxes of the artwork.
I like his cute little keyboard.
I know, it's cute. Ah, I see you have chosen the gutter as your question. Okay. Question.
I'll grant you 3 wishes.
And the first 2 don't count. And you can't say I want more wishes. That doesn't work either.
All right, question number 3.
What is a splash page?
A splash page?
This is just for Ben Lawrence, really.
I'm just going to answer them without raising my hand.
I'm fascinated. He's just rolling on.
Just a full page. It's like a full page of art.
Yes.
It can even also span the 2 pages.
Oh, dang. There you go.
Double page.
All of
double page. All right. Double splash.
Nailed it. All right. So monthly sequential issues are often generally referred to as a comic. But there's also another term for it that we have thrown around on the panel jumper. What is that term?
The monthly sequential issues? A book?
What is it doing?
What is it doing?
Oh, it's a floppy!
Yeah!
I didn't know that. I hadn't gathered that.
Not everybody uses that term. That might be Comics Dungeon-y term.
Yeah, but I figured since it was on the panel jump, or Perfect Bound, whatever we're doing right now, is...
We're doing Perfect Bound now. This thing.
There will be a panel jumper live, though, eventually, right?
Yeah, anyway. Coming up.
All right, last question.
May 27th.
For Ben Lawrence. graphic novel is a term hard to pin down, but as we generally use it, what would you define a graphic novel to be?
What would I define a graphic novel to be?
As opposed to like a trade paperback or something like that.
Oh,
what
I
would
see.
You define a graphic novel to be?
It's one complete story. That's not, it was not released as a sequential series.
Exactly. Yep. Perfect. Yeah. Ben Lawrence wins all.
Nailed it.
I am so incredibly proud of you, Ben Lawrence.
Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Nicole, for that tailored quiz time. Thank you for listening to us and watching us if you stuck with us thus far.
No, that's weird.
That's our show, and we will see you next week.